No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or you can Skype us at BBSRADIO and the number one. So join in the conversation, guys. We were supposed to have a guest tonight, but due to some snafu of some sort, they didn't get back to us in time, or we're not exactly sure what happened, but we don't have the guest tonight because they screwed up something on their end. So it's just going to be me and Maria, and please save poor Maria from having to listen to me talk for an hour and call in and call in and ask some questions, okay? So how
but
are you?
You know what, Michael? What? I just want to say that when we do have guests, we kind of have to gloss over some of the news of the day, and also with your District of Columbia, because you've had some really great movement happening this year, so it seems, and we don't really get to let you have the platform that I wish you were able to. So maybe we can go into a little bit of that now, if you don't mind, because I always find it fascinating what you have to share.
Well, and this week was a big week for us because we celebrated Emancipation Day, which is the only holiday that we actually have, official holiday we have in the District of Columbia. And it's a really interesting holiday. And I have to apologize a little bit because had I known, if we had known that the guest wasn't going to be available, that I would have prepared more. But as it was, when I found out, I was already wrapped up in 100 other things and didn't have time to do as much research as I should have on the history. But I know it pretty well because I celebrate it every year. And just for you guys out there that may not know what Emancipation Day is, Washington, D.C., in 1862, Abraham Lincoln bought all the slaves in the District of Columbia. Approximately 3,400 slaves, and he freed them all. And this was he did as a prelude to the Emancipation Proclamation, which 9 months later he signed, and it freed the slaves. But this was kind of a big PR thing that he did in advance of that, and it's the only compensated emancipation in U.S. history. The rest of the slaves just got freed. The guys in Washington got paid to free the slaves. So that in itself is interesting. And the holiday used to be a huge holiday. The President of the United States used to come out and be in the parade every year after this happened for several years. And it was a big, big celebration in Washington. But then it died. In about the 1870s, I think, or 1880s, it just, kind of disappeared. And a lovely woman named Loretta Carter Haynes and a dear friend of mine named Vincent Orange, who was on the city council at the time, revived it about a decade ago and brought it back. And now we celebrate it. And yesterday was a big celebration. We had a concert. We had fireworks. We had a big breakfast the day before where we brought in people, members of Congress and other people. And officially, I should point this out, that Emancipation Day is April 16th. We held the celebration this week because next week is Easter. And they didn't
How smart is that?
They didn't want to interfere, you know. But it was also the Cherry Blossom Parade, which is the number one tourist thing in Washington. So those two things kind of overlapped yesterday. But it turned out to be a lot of fun, I think. And it brings forth always the issue that we're still not emancipated in the District of Columbia. So we use it not only to celebrate what Lincoln did, a Republican, I might point out, the first Republican, and what he did, and what and the fact that we still are not fully emancipated here in Washington D.C. So we use it to highlight that.
It's such a conundrum to me. And I love it that you were able to revive it. And is it as well attended now, 10 years later, as you would have hoped?
No.
Oh, really?
No, not like it was then. Because look, blacks had been enslaved for all those years, right? And in Washington D.C. anyway, this was the moment of their freedom. So it was a big holiday when it first started. I mean, every African American in Washington was involved, I bet, in one way or the other. I mean, it was, and of course, the rest of the community as well. And
so tell me, being the senator from D.C., it must be a huge day for you politically, yes?
Well, you would think, but unfortunately, the people in the District of Columbia government that run things are never allow themselves to be upstaged at anything. So they take the lead on everything. So the mayor got up and spoke, yes, at the big breakfast, and the head of the city council got up and spoke, and Senator Van Hollen from Maryland got up and spoke, and other people got up and spoke, and we got recognized.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Right. So they go.
So there's competition,
thanks to Senator Brown, who's his mouth is full of bacon and eggs right now, but we'd like to thank him. I mean, it really is disheartening. And you know, when you think about it, I'm really incredulous at the fact that these people that are pushing to have their voices heard really don't take the office that I have, which is the only office in the District of Columbia ever created by the voters. This was actually
the rest was legislated.
Yeah, was yes, exactly, and approved by Congress. But our offices were created in a constitutional convention, and they follow a what's called the Tennessee Plan, which was a way to get statehood. And the thing that I love most is that the Tennessee Plan has been used 6 times, and every time it's resulted in statehood, except for the District of Columbia, where they've completely changed the Tennessee Plan. So California is one of the states that used the Tennessee Plan, and California had what were known as shadow senators. They had one of the most famous shadow senators, a guy named Fremont, who was a general during the Civil War, or was an officer, I think he was a general, during the Civil War, who then moved to San Francisco. And I'm not exactly sure what he did besides become fabulously wealthy, because half the damn things in San Francisco are named after him. There's Fremont Street, and there's Fremont, the Fremont Hotel, and there's the Fremont this and the Fremont that. So he was one of the more famous shadow senators. But Michigan also used the plan and got through. Tennessee, of course, used the plan and became a state. Alaska was the last place to use the plan. Minnesota also used the plan and became a state. So all these places became a state. Then when they got to D.C., they said, the Constitutional Convention, they said, great, let's create these offices. Let's follow the Tennessee plan. And what they did was they took away all the compensation from the offices that were created. The city council, after the offices were created, the city council turned around and took away the compensation. Now, the senators and Congress, you know, representative from Alaska got paid $76,000 in current dollars for their service. They also took us out of the Constitution. The senators in every other case were not only in the Constitution, but the Constitution and the whole plan was really built around them. So they've changed, they radically changed the Tennessee plan, and it hasn't worked, and they wonder why.
I to me, it's like you're the eternal optimist, because when I hear of your struggles and the common sense that you make and the whole thing with the song, no, you know, taxation without representation. And yet then I wonder, are you being idealistic here or Pollyanna, or in your lifetime, do you think this will ever happen?
Well, from where you sit, because you're such a kind and generous person, you might call me an optimist. But from where I'm sitting, I feel like the political pinata sometime, mm-hmm. you know, that everybody's taking a swing at me. But I don't know if it's, you know, I hope that it will happen. But you know what I think to myself when I think about that Brewery thing that you just brought up, Maria, is that what do I do? What are the alternatives? You know, Lyndon Johnson, good Democrat, was elected. Well, at first he filled in, you know, because he was vice president after the assassination of Kennedy. I'm sure that civil rights people, and this is a civil rights issue, I'm sure that civil rights people back then were apoplectic about the fact that Johnson was an avowed segregationist. You know, of course, in civil rights, he moved the ball forward a lot. He signed the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act, which actually were started probably by Kennedy, or actually were started by Kennedy, but he followed through. So, but they must have been very upset, but I don't think that stopped them from moving, you know? So what I'm trying to say is, I move on this issue because I think we always have to move on this issue. Whether it happens or not, you can't, what are you going to say? Okay, well, we're just going to accept the fact that we don't have the equal rights. We really can't do that.
I know. That's why I call it, it's such a conundrum, because if you do nothing, then you stand for nothing, right? And, mm-hmm. but the powers that be, and it seems like such extraordinary forces are against you, that it really is a David and Goliath kind of story.
Well, it is kind of, but you know, then again, I also think of people that have changed the world, both liberals and conservatives, mm-hmm. you know, people like Rosa Parks or people like Phyllis Schlafly, you know, who stood against the Equal Rights Amendment. You know, Schlafly was a lawyer, but people used to laugh at her. I was involved in the women's movement. They used to laugh at her and call her a housewife. And yeah. But they couldn't beat her. And Rosa Parks, you know, I mean, she was also an activist, to be honest about it. But she was a seamstress who was tired one night and didn't give her seat up on the bus. So, you know, I believe it's Margaret Mead that said a handful of dedicated, concerned people can change the world. And in fact, that's the only thing that ever has. So, you know, I hope that that's the truth. I hope that, because there are only a handful of us, believe me. When we go out there, we just had a referendum. 86% of the people in the District of Columbia voted for statehood. But we have a rally. A couple hundred people show up. Now, that's increasing. Yesterday, there was a big crowd at the parade, a bigger crowd than normal.
That was for statehood, specifically?
Well, statehood is certainly the issue that we brought forth at that rally, and it's what we pushed. So, yes, I would say most of them were there for statehood. But as I said earlier, it was also the Cherry Blossom Parade, which was right down the street, which, you know, it's the biggest tourist event in the District of Columbia. So, you know, how many people did we get that were on their way to the tour? The cherry blossoms. Yeah, and how many people, you know, and it was a relatively, well, it's kind of a mediocre day, actually. Today's a beautiful day. But so it's hard to tell. But, yes, there's a new fervor for statehood. Some guy, one of the things, and I got to tell you, one of the things that's helping us is that this Republican congressman from Utah is stepping all over the District of Columbia, and it's making people mad, and it's getting people,
active.
Out there.
Yeah. So his actions are polarizing. Well, with your referendum, 87%, that obviously says a lot, but how many people did, what was your percentage that showed up to the polls in November?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I would say because it was a presidential election, probably like 60%, which when you think about it, in my opinion, is kind of dismal for the District of Columbia, you know, the nation's capital. You would think more people would show up. But I think that, you know, a lot of people say, why bother? You know, we don't have the same rights. Well, you know, why elect these people when they can't vote in Congress? Why, you know? But and the mayor wasn't up, but 60% I would guess, but that's what it is. It's a guess. And you know what? Statehood is like world peace. If you ask, you know, that's my evaluation. If you ask people if they're for world peace, they all say yes. Who would say no to that?
Exactly.
Right. And it's kind of the thing with statehood. But like, are you going out working for world peace today? And people are like, well, you know, I got to go to work and I got to, you know, but wouldn't it be lovely? And it's never going to happen. And there are mean people all over the world. So you can't make it, you know, you can't make that a reality, but wouldn't it be nice if you could? Those same kind of pressures exist in the statehood movement, you know, that people feel the same way, I think, on a large scale.
It's got to be, because you're such a part of the wallpaper, it's got to be difficult to keep people passionate because, yes, they're for it, but you're right, they have their lives. And it doesn't seem like you can make much progress. It's like watching an iceberg melt. You know, I mean, over time, yeah, there is something happening. But because when you mention about you have more endorsers and more people behind you, I keep thinking, okay, well, maybe now you're going to get the momentum. Because obviously there has to be a critical mass at some point where it's going to, you know, you're done pushing that boulder up the mountain and you got there so you can push it down soon.
Yeah.
That's what I keep hoping for you.
Well, and that's true. And, of course, one of the major obstacles we have is that we need people from all over the country to put pressure on their legislators to stand behind our statehood legislation. And that's not easy because, again, these guys won't put money into it. Look, they just announced that they're going to put $1 million into statehood. That's a big deal in the District of Columbia. But my entire budget next year is $79,000 to run my office, including all salaries and all. And $1 million is actually going into the mayor's effort to get statehood. So that's a little disheartening for me.
Was it a grant or a donation?
No. It's from the $13.8 billion budget. We're a city with a $13.8 billion budget, which is going to give major tax cuts this year to middle-class people because we have so much damn money, we don't know what to do with all of it. There are so many millennials moving into the District of Columbia, and it's an expensive place to live. So property taxes and other things are just rolling in, and we have millennials moving in, right?
How are they affording it? Are they renting or buying?
Well, you know, I don't know how they're affording it. I mean, I guess if you're a married couple, your whole life is your mortgage and child care, you know? And if you're single, you're doing what my daughter in Chicago is doing. She's living with three other girls, you know, in a four-story walk-up. Right? Because, and when I question her about it, I say, you know, I've been to her apartment, and I go, ooh, well, this is a little, you know, it's in a good part of town. And what she says to me, it's like in a neighborhood that's been rehabbed, you know what I mean?
Regentrified.
Or gentrified, right. But it looks like the one building that they forgot. You know, you look at her building, and you look around at all the other buildings, you're like, where the hell did this building come from?
And where's this landlord?
But she says to me, Dad, it's $500 a month. You don't understand.
My gosh.
Living in a good neighborhood in Chicago for $500 a month and it's not a great neighborhood. You know, it's not an upscale neighborhood, but it's a safe neighborhood. And she says, you know, that's just amazing.
Michael, is there any chance that the mayor will share some of that largesse, or it sounds like no, it's elbows out and protecting it?
No, yes, they don't like us. And guess what, Maria? I've started a fight with everybody in Washington. There's nobody in power in city government that I haven't started a fight with. And, you know, because I'm sick and tired of this. I mean, it's time to step up to the plate. Look, Hillary Clinton spent more than $1 billion on a nationwide campaign, and she lost. These guys want to put $800,000 into this campaign. This is ridiculous. We spend $2.1 billion on education in the District of Columbia. That's approximately $23,000 for each student that attends school in the District of Columbia. And our public schools are 47th in the nation behind Mississippi.
Yikes. That's
terrible.
And I don't
know what people in Mississippi spend on education, but I guarantee you it's not $23,000 per student per year. It's abysmal.
What do you think that's about? Usually when you throw money at something, you solve things. That's a private school education that you're talking about, basically.
Yeah, it's a college education if you're paying state tuition, probably, as an undergraduate at a lot of places, not at all colleges, but, you know, in a lot of places, if you're paying in-state tuition, I bet that's approximately what it costs to go to the University of Maryland, which is my alma mater, which cost about $12 a year when I went there. it's a lot of money. And you know what? The worst thing about it is that we have 50% of our public school children are in charter schools. So, and the reason they're in charter schools is because people are abandoning the public school system. You know, it's like there's a Chinese immersion school. So you understand that. People that want to put their kids in a Chinese immersion school, that's great. That's a type of charter school. And there are probably there's a Spanish immersion school. I'm sure there's a French immersion school. And those things you understand. But half of the students in the District of Columbia that go to public schools go to public charter schools because people, especially in the poor neighborhoods of Washington, were tired of seeing their kids not get a decent education. This year, the Washington Post hails the fact that every kid from one of our schools in one of the worst parts of the city applied to college. Well, that's great. But still, the District of Columbia ranks top five in lowest SAT scores, top five in lowest math scores, top five in lowest reading scores, top five in dropout rate in the country.
This part of the reason that you're starting to have issues with other elected folks? Is that because you prefaced all this by saying that you're getting engaged with people? Is education one of the reasons, not just statehood?
Well, no, I just use education as an example of how these guys, you know, they call DC statehood a priority because we don't have our basic rights.
Right.
They spend $23,000 or about I think it's like $3,000 for, let me figure it out for you, $3,000 a person for everybody in the District of Columbia that on education. And about $3,000, I think. Let me see. I got a calculator right here. On everybody that lives in the district, they spend $3,500 for each man, woman, and child in the district for education. But they spend 33 cents with our delegation for statehood per person. Well, there are no 33-cent priorities as far as I'm concerned. And you have to understand that our delegation, for the first 8 years, I was not only not paid, but I didn't even have a budget. Everything came out of my own pocket. So this radio show that we have right now was paid for by me personally. If we needed T-shirts or posters or anything, I had to pay for it. I've spent more money out of my own pocket than the city gave me the first 8 years I had the office.
Well, that must be, here's, now you're making some sense. That has to be one of the reasons that you aren't gaining more ground, is if you can't even get the folks in the powers that be to make it a priority, not just with words, but actions. Because you have about 660,000 residents, I think, in District mm-hmm. of Columbia. So if you divide $1 million by that, it comes out to $1.50.
Yeah, $1.50. So, and it's going to the mayor. And when I say I'm getting in a fight, that's what I mean. You know,
right.
I saw the mayor the other day and I said to her, I can't believe they're going to hire somebody to manage the money and the program and for the mayor, and they're going to pay him they put aside $96,000 to do that. And my entire budget for next year is $79,000. So I said to her at this breakfast, look, you know, I can't believe you're paying somebody $96,000 to do what I'm doing for free. I said, you need to put some money into this. And she turned around and she said, I put $1 million into it. And I looked at her and I said, oh, you didn't put $1 million into it. You put $1 million into your own office. Mm-hmm. Not into the office, you know, to which, and that really made her mad.
And this was, you know, public, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Michael.
I think her security, you know, she's the mayor of a major city, right? So she has two cops with her all the time. I said to my wife, I think they took a step forward because they weren't sure whether she was going to go after me or I was going to go after her. And I said, in the end, I know who would have gotten the worst of that deal. You know, would have certainly been me, because she could probably kick my ass and the two guys with her I know could. So, you know, I mean, all kidding aside, though, I'm angry. They're angry. And they're not going to empower us. And to let you know how bad it is, they're doing a symposium at the University of the District of Columbia on statehood. And what are our chances to have statehood in the era of Donald Trump and a Republican controlled Congress? So who do they invite? They invite all sorts of people that have been tangentially involved in the movement, from people from the mayor's office, people from the public interest group that deals with this in Washington. Not only don't they put us on the panel, they don't even invite us.
You're
so
kidding.
No. So
how disrespectful.
So I write a letter. I write a nasty email to the dean, who tells me that she was reaching out, but my email just coincidentally got there a half an hour before she reached out.
Uh-huh.
And now my colleague, Senator Strauss, is going to be one of the moderators. So great, great. But we shouldn't have to write a nasty email to people to get them to even include us. And the point of this is that I don't blame this the dean. She's a great person. She cares deeply about the issue. I blame the people in the Wilson Building, City Hall, because if the people that you work with don't support you, who's going to support you?
Well, and that's what I'm wondering about, more grassroots. Like, do you, aside from this radio broadcast of Shadow Politics, do you have other media liaisons or partnerships in print and on the web and, you know, somebody blogging for you and all of that stuff to keep that? I mean, what you're sharing with us right now is compelling and riveting and terrible, and I don't even know how you can stand it, because that is so disrespectful on so many levels.
Everything that you've said
overlooked, the ego getting involved, the $1 million going not to your cause but to the mayor's. I mean, this is more I think impactful, what you're sharing with us, and I'm sure not to your highest good politically, but maybe because if you're out there fighting, then people who are every person's may understand what you're doing to help them instead of catapulting to the powers that be.
Well, let me tell you what it does to me politically. I had somebody say to me one time over one of my political moves, "We worry about your political future." And it made me laugh. I said, "I'm the shadow senator. I have no political future. What am I going to be, shadow president or shadow, you know, I'm sure now that Trump's in the White House, he would love to have a shadow president. You know, somebody you could say, oh, that wasn't me. That was his shadow president. But you know, I said, I have no political past. I have no political future. I only have a political present. And that's the only power that I have. So I'm trying to use it because, you know what? This is a partisan issue. I don't think we can make it happen in the next 2 years, given the makeup of Congress. That's when my term is up. We'll have another election. Maybe in 2 years, we'll be able to, have a different makeup in Congress, and we'll be able to move the ball forward. But to do that, you got to be prepared. So that's where I am right now. I'm beating these guys up, trying to get them to listen and to do, you know, the
so
things.
So the other thing I'm thinking, you know, here's my marketing PR hat coming on, but like your local publications, you know, a day in the life of getting DC statehood, and then, you know, the trials and tribulations, forget letters to the editor, you know, a regular piece that you pen.
Well, first of all, we don't have a local newspaper. We have the Washington Post, who really thinks they're the New York Times. Mm-hmm. And they, you know what I mean? If you took the voting rights away from Californians, there would be a 10-page article on it. But locally, you know, that's too pedestrian for them, right? We get on the second page. The Emancipation Day got on the third page of the Metro section today. The parade and everything that happened yesterday.
Because so you're saying they want to do things that are national and international and not local?
Yeah, they're too cool to deal with us. They're dealing with Donald Trump and the Syrians and you know, all the national news. And it really annoys me because, look, we're the only country in the world that does this. There's no other country in the world that does this. And it seems to me that in itself makes it an interesting story. And I'm not sure why people aren't more, you know, want to cover it more. But also, it points out the great hypocrisy as we go around the world trying to spread democracy, you know, that we have. Another Republican friend of ours, Jack Kemp, may he rest in peace, who was a supporter of the legislation to get us a single vote in the House. And of course, if you remember, he was a not only a great football player, mm-hmm. but a congressman, mm-hmm. and a member and a cabinet member. He said that the reason that he was for getting DC a vote is because he went to China. And one of the first things they said to him when he started to talk about, civil rights, when he talked about human rights to the Chinese, they said, don't lecture us when you don't let the people in your in the capital of your country even have a vote, even wow. have a voice in their own legislature. And that's true, you know? So
Michael, one of our listeners has asked the question, what are the reasons that they use that makes this issue so unimportant? What are their excuses?
It depends on who you're dealing with. But if you're dealing with people that are opposed to us, they say, well, it's part of the Constitution. You need to change the Constitution. And we know that the Constitution has only really been changed a couple dozen times since the since the creation of the Union, because right. the first 10 amendments to the Constitution were the Bill of Rights, you know. So the Bill of Rights, you really can't count the first 10, right? So you've got 27 amendments, and in the same period of time, you've gotten 37 states. So it's easier to become a state than it is to become amend the Constitution. Right. And so that's what they say to us, go and amend the Constitution. Because the founding fathers didn't want the people of the District of Columbia to have these rights. And that's not true, because the Constitution doesn't say anything about taking our rights away. It only says that Congress can do whatever it wants, and Congress chose to take our rights away. So
What kind of conversations preceded that. Like, do you think there was back pain, blackmailing, lobbying for them so whomever made that final decision?
Well, our friend James Madison, who we love here in Washington, was the guy that pushed it. We know this. We know from the Federalist Papers that Jefferson and other people were against it, were against federal control of the federal district, taking the rights away from Washingtonians. But first of all, it was a different battle because there weren't very many people that lived here at the time. That's number one. And number two, and it was seen as, you know, it was going to be people that worked for the government. Right. This was 1789. Mm-hmm. The only people that were going to live, you couldn't farm here. It you know, it's Foggy Bottom. It's swampy. It's, you know, it's not good agricultural land. So they really didn't see that there were going to be 675,000 people living here. There are more people living here today than were probably eligible to vote in the first election, because mm-hmm. voting was so restricted. Okay, so they really never, the idea was not to take our representation away necessarily. But what happened was, there was a thing called the Pennsylvania Riot. And what happened when the Congress met in Philadelphia, which is one of the places it met before it moved to Washington. When it met in Philadelphia, people from the Revolutionary War hadn't been paid, soldiers. So they came to Carpenter's Hall, and they surrounded Carpenter's Hall with torches. So Congress felt threatened, and they called the governor, and they said, call out the militia to stop these guys. But the governor, being a politician, was not about to call out soldiers to come out and shoot soldiers that he needed to vote for him, right? They were all Pennsylvanians. So he said, I'm not calling out the militia on my own people who are veterans to boot, right?
Right.
So Congress got together and they ran to New Jersey. And they hit out, literally hit out. And so when they came to Washington, Madison made the argument, we can never have a situation like that again. We need to be control of the federal district. We cannot rely on the governor of Maryland or the governor of Virginia to call out the troops if we need them. We need to be in control. And, you know, Maryland and Virginia are the people that donated the land to the District of Columbia, to become the District of Columbia. So they said, you know, we're not going to do that. And that's how it all started. So they wrote into the Constitution a clause which says exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over a district not to exceed 10 miles square, which may, by the secession of particular states and acceptance of Congress, become the capital of the United States. And that's what happened. So Congress can do whatever it wants in Washington, whatever it wants. We have no states' rights. They can come in here and they can, you know, they can overturn any of our laws. They can do whatever they want with our budget. They make rules for us. We can't, you know, we have all this money, but we also lose about $2 billion a year because we can't tax anybody that works in the city that doesn't live here. Unlike if you lived in Nevada and you worked in California, you would pay some sort of tax to the state of Nevada, even though you live
where your residence is.
Well, no, where you work as well as your residence. You pay your primary taxes and your residence. This is a typical situation, really, in like New York and New Jersey. You know, if you work in Manhattan but you live in New Jersey, you pay a certain tax to Manhattan, but that comes off your New Jersey state taxes. You know what I mean? The taxpayer doesn't pay anymore, but the state loses some money. And there are also things like it costs you $14 to go through the Holland Tunnel. So that's a commuter tax. We're not allowed to do any of that. We're not allowed to put up toll booths. We're not allowed to tax your income. If you live outside the jurisdiction, we're not allowed to do any of that. So we lose a lot of money every year because of this. And they make all sorts of rules. They've overturned. We voted. We had a referendum to legalize marijuana. And so we've done that. And Congress said, well, you can legalize it. We won't overturn that, but you can't talk about it and you cannot regulate it. You can't talk about it or tax it. You can't talk about it. The city council was going to have hearings on how to regulate it and tax it. And Congress, our friend Jason Chaffetz from Utah, threatened to put the council members in jail if they got together to meet to talk about it.
Wow.
I mean, it's crazy. We had a needle exchange program, which they took out of our budget every year, even though it was local tax money that actually paid for the needle exchange. And we did the needle exchange because HIV was so rampant in Washington. Doesn't take a lot of brains to figure out that if you've got a dirty needle in a room of 15 people, you can spread AIDS to 15 people in half an hour. You know, so needle exchange was important. They took it out every year until we finally became the number one city in America with new AIDS cases, and they let us keep it in just a few years ago. And then on top of that, after they let us keep it in, they said it can't be, they passed a regulation and said it can't be within 1,000 feet, I think, of any place a child would go. So now, where, you know, right?
Parks, schools, churches, stores.
Stores, right. Yeah. It can be within 1,000 feet of a strip club?
That
or
was
a
exactly
bar?
What I was going to say.
I mean, yeah, what places do we not allow our children to go?
Yeah, seedy neighborhoods.
Yeah, so you know, that
well, I so admire your persistence and your passion, and it's evident in how you speak about it. And it's all I keep coming back to is how disrespectful it is on so many levels. And the fact that you don't take it personally is also admirable, because at some point it's like, geez, I keep banging my head against this wall. It hurts. You know,
yeah, it's hard not to take it personally. And I do. As hard as I try not to, you know, we recently had a budget hearing. I should put it up online. We recently had an oversight hearing where the chairman of the city council grilled us on what we do with the $12.80 that they give us, you know, and I became so animated that, you know, that when I go to meetings now and stuff, I hear about it. I heard what happened. And you go, were you there at the budget? And they go, no, but we watched it online, or somebody told me about it, you know? Because, and so I become the, you know, the professional complainer. But you know what? That's why I did this. I started out to start a fight with Congress, and I'm sorry that my fight with Congress has turned into a fight with the mayor and the city council and the other people, the other powers that be.
Well, you're the burr under the saddle, you know, the agitator, and of course the squeaky wheel. So hopefully it'll coalesce into some success for you, because it seems reasonable to me, although I don't understand Puerto Rico or the U.S. Virgin Islands either, but that they're not nearly as important in terms of the people and the commerce and the historic and all of that, that the District of Columbia is. There's no doubt about that. So,
well, it's true that we've been part of America since America began. Puerto Ricans have been part of America since 1910, though. They've been around a long time. I think it was 1910. But anyway, the fact that you bring them up, Puerto Rico is about to have an election on June 11th, I believe it is, where they're going to decide whether they want to follow the Tennessee plan. And they're going to elect 2 United States senators and 5 members of Congress.
Are they?
Yes, because that's what they would get, because it's based, you know, representation
population
of the House is based on population, right? And they're going to send them to Washington. And guess what? Every one of them, I bet, is going to be compensated, and they're going to have a budget that far exceeds ours, even though they're the poorest jurisdiction.
I was just going to say they're
America.
Hurting financially,
hurting.
Really hurting. So yeah. I don't know. I don't know. I'm going to actually be there. That's the kickoff of my spring break with my daughter. We're going to be in San Juan, Puerto Rico for 2 nights before we jump on a ship. So I'll be curious to see what it's like firsthand.
Yeah, I've been there to get some feedback on how. When are you going?
April 20th.
Yeah, well, I'd love to get some feedback on if they're, you know, if it's a big deal or not.
I'll do some boots on the ground, and now that I know this, I can maybe perhaps make some appointments in advance, because that would be fascinating to hear, you know, how important is it to them.
You know, and things are moving. I don't want to just paint a dismal picture here. We had last week, people on the show that took a bunch of kids to Capitol Hill to lobby. Well, that was a big deal. Let me tell you, I showed up for that, for the lobby day, and there were a lot of people, a lot more than I expected.
Really?
And now this week, they're going to meet with the committee that oversees the District of Columbia that Jason Chaffetz is on. So they're making
some noise.
Oh yeah. Well, let me tell you, if you're a member of Congress and you just happen to be out there listening, don't mess with moms, especially Capitol Hill moms, because they're not only tough, they know what they're doing. And these women that organize this thing, know what they're doing. So there is movement. And, you know, there was a councilman who had a hearing on or had I don't know what you want to call it, a get together, I guess, at a local theater about what we're going to do to keep Congress's hands off the District of Columbia and in our quest for statehood, what we're going to do. And 700 people showed up. Now, 700 people out of 675,000, it's not a ton of people. But normally at an event like that, with very little promotion, only a couple of days on the internet, we'd be lucky to get 50 people.
Well, that says a lot, Michael.
Right.
700 people is a lot.
Yeah, so it's growing. The sentiment is growing. And we're getting all these millennials from other states, you know, who come here. People don't know about this. Maria,
right.
They move here from a place like California, and they don't understand you don't have representation because it's the nation's capital. Why would you have representation? You know, I mean, it's just crazy. It's crazy.
Maybe that'll be to your advantage then, right? You get people who are scratching their head and going, this isn't right. that we need to do something about this. And then you'll have this whole wave of new folks that are, I guess you could say, recruited into the cause because it doesn't make sense to them.
We hope that that's the case because you're exactly right. You know, it really people that have been here a while, I mean, I guess have accepted it. And, you know, it's funny because one of the problems that we have, there's new legislation that's been put out that would fund our offices better. Rather than me getting $79,000 a year, it would give me $350,000 a year to work with and have an office, which is more reasonable. But it's based on legislation that was stalled for several years because the chairman of the city council and I fight with each other constantly, and he stalled it. But there used to be a $35,000 stipend in it, and they've taken that out of the new legislation. And, you know, it's incredulous to me because this really hurts us when we go up to Capitol Hill. People use it against us. They go, well, you're a volunteer, right?
Right.
Oh, yeah, I'm a volunteer senator. How stupid does that sound to say that? I'm a volunteer United States senator. Yeah. So the stipend would help us, but they won't give us anything that would even empower us a little bit. And when I say this to them, very often the response to me is, well, you knew the job wasn't paid when you ran for it. Well, you know what, mayor or chairman of the city council or whoever you are, you also knew you weren't moving to a state when you moved here, but that doesn't make it right, and it doesn't mean it should be changed. And, you know, and I'm incredulous at the fact that they say stuff like this to you. Go, hello, you know.
Yeah, well, especially since you guys are cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
I mean, when you think about it, it's all governing, legislation, representation, etc. I don't care what your title is, but you.
Well, a lot of those guys are cut from the seat of the cloth, you know, unfortunately. And, you know, that's just a problem. It's I ran against the chairman of the city council in order to prove that I was a good campaigner. I had no money. I had no support. I had a campaign that he had run a campaign for 18 months. I ran a campaign for 3 months. And a month before the election, I was 12 points ahead with likely voters.
Wow.
And so, yeah. So he freaked. And this was a guy that was running for the city council at the time. But as fate would have it, in the District of Columbia, then the chairman of the council resigned in disgrace, which happens for us from time to time.
And more often than that.
More often than that. And you know, but this guy became chairman of the city council. And, you know, they're not going to let us step up. They don't want two more politicians in Washington. And it's a shame. It really works against the cause. And we got to change that. So I'm going to get in a fight with everybody. And there's like nobody that's anybody in Washington, D.C. that I'm not fighting with. So if you and your daughter decide to stop by Washington, don't be dropping my name around. Say you're related to somebody else.
Yeah, that won't get me the best seat in the house, huh?
No, it won't get you the best seat in the house. You know, you'll be lucky to get a seat in the house.
Yeah,
But anyway, you know, there's so many things to talk about that Maria and I are just going to have a show to talk about some current stuff.
Yeah, and, you know, the ISIS claiming the carnage with the two church bombings on Palm Sunday. I guess I'm speechless. There's nothing sacred. Nothing. Yeah. Man, woman, child with the Syria. It's almost incomprehensible to know that there's that kind of evil.
Yes.
That's evil.
Well, and it's a terrible, you know, it's a terrible situation and very hard to deal with.
Well, and, you know, their Pope was actually in the cathedral And he's meeting with Pope Francis later this month, and they're saying that he was probably going to be assassinated. That's what they were hoping to do.
That's terrible.
The leader of the Coptic Church.
Well, we've run out of time, folks, so we're going to have to pick up the conversation next week. Support DC statehood. Thank you, Maria. We're not going to be on next week. We're
going to run because it's Easter Sunday.
It's Easter Sunday, so we want everybody to have a great Easter or Passover or whatever you celebrate this time of year. Don't forget, it's a time for reflection, and
renewal. Yeah.
And renewal. Think about us in Washington, D.C., because we need your thoughts. So we're going to leave you tonight with one of my favorites, Peter, Paul, and Mary, Blowing in the Wind, because right now that's where statehood is. It's blowing in the wind. So this goes out to the 675,000 loyal citizens of the District of Columbia who pay the highest taxes in America and who are proud to say 32 of our residents have received the Congressional Medal of Honor. So this is for you guys. Thank you, and have a great Easter. And enjoy yourself, Maria. It's going to be a while till we hear Maria, right? Because
yes.
You're going to be gone. Next week we're not going to be on the air, and you're going to be gone the following week. So
correct.
So we'll see you soon. Have fun. Have a margarita for me.
Or a daiquiri in Puerto Rico. Have a great week, everyone, and a couple weeks, too. Thank you, Michael, for the honor. Appreciate it, as always.
Yeah, me too.
Give the people their right to vote.